We're holding on page Samach Ches in Shabbos Ois Kuf Gimel. Samach Ches. Page Samach Ches Ois Kuf Gimel, beginning of Perek Chodesh. One thing it mentions in the Perek, again, these last few Prokim and Mishnayos mostly talk about various miscellaneous Hilchos Shabbos, some Daraisa, some Darabonon, most Darabonon. Anyway, it mentions that things that were cooked. We know there's a concept in bishul acha bishul. So if you have something cooked before Shabbos, then you're allowed to warm it up. Then to a certain extent, you're allowed to warm it up on Shabbos, for example, rinsing it in hot water. But if not, then you can't. And particularly, the Mishnah mentions a type of fish called kulya sa'isponin. Rashi earlier in the Masechta defines it as some kind of tuna fish, as some subspecies of tuna. Sa'isponin would mean it comes from Spain. The Aruch translates it as a type of mackerel. And in fact, you have the scientific name of mackerel has the word coleus in it, which makes it more likely that it's that. Whatever the case, anyway, so the point is that the fish with a very soft skin, such that just rinsing in hot water alone is enough to cook it and make it edible, so therefore you wouldn't be able to do that on Shabbos, because that would be cooking. Right. So that leads the Gemara now into the following discussion, where also the coleus say spawning is going to figure in it. The Gemara tells Yosef Rav Chiya Ba'Abba and Rav Asi Kameid Rav Yechanan. Rav Chiya Ba'Abba and Rav Asi were sitting as Talmidim in front of Rav Yechanan, the Yosef Rav Yechanan become a nam. Rav Yechanan was sitting and drowsing. So while he was drowsing, while he was taking a nap, they were talking Torah. There's really two possibilities. You have all over Shas, things like that, where two Talmidim are sitting in front of their Rebbe while their Rebbe is drowsing, and then he wakes up and tells them something. Two possibilities, really, that there could be about it. One could be that literally that he's tired and he's taking a short nap while they're meanwhile continuing to learn Torah, in which case the Gemara would be highlighting that to show how the Chachamim are pushing themselves to the point of exhaustion teaching Torah, and even then they're ready to wake up at a moment's notice and teach them. The other possibility, actually, and I may have mentioned this before in this shiur, I don't remember, is this Gemara in Moed Katan, where it says about it, where it mentions about Rava, and I think about a couple of the other Chachamim as well, that they were menamnim, meaning they were about to pass away. And then like the last words they said or the last before or shortly before that. So in that case, conceivably, in some of these cases, it could mean the same thing, that he's near death, but he's still ready to teach his Talmidim, and they're still attending on him and trying to learn Torah as much as possible. Anyway, why are the birds in Bavel so fat? Fatter than the ones in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Asi says they're not. Go take yourself and betake yourself to the desert of Aza, which would be nowadays, I guess, part of the Gaza Strip or somewhere near there. Rashi points out, by the way, the word kloch is really short for lecha lecha or lech lecha. It's a shortened version of it, but that's what it means. Take yourself to there, and you'll see ba'arecha shemeni mehem, and I can show you there are fatter birds. There are fatter birds over there than the ones in Bavel. Both your Priya Ba'aba and Rav Asi, by the way, were from Bavel. They were now learning in Eretz Yisrael by Rav Yechon. But anyway, he says your assumption is incorrect. You're saying all the ones in Bavel that in Bavel you only find fat ones, and in Eretz Yisrael you don't. In Eretz Yisrael there are also fat ones, even fatter ones. Next, he asks, why are the young Tovim in Bavel particularly happy? They have more of a Simchas Yomtov than they do in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Asi answers, because they're poor. So therefore, Rashi explains, the rest of the year, they don't have much simcha in terms of food and drink, and they have to work very hard. So therefore, when they have Yom Tov, they have a break on Yom Tov, they have good food, and they have a break from work, then they're extra happy. Agav, you have in this connection, you know, you have minig Ashkenaz, that we do duchening only on Yom Tov in Chutzlar, and that's related to the idea. Even on Shabbos, a person is not working on Shabbos either, and he's not supposed to even think about his work, as we've learned about before. Nevertheless, inevitably, a person still steals into a person's thoughts a little bit. So therefore, we're not truly the Simcha on Shabbos as much as we are on Yom Tov. Anyway. Then he asks, why are the Talmid Chachamim in Bavel particularly distinguished as far as their dress? Apparently in Bavel, the Talmid Chachamim would make a point of dressing in a way different than the regular people, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, they tended to dress the same as everybody else does. So why? So he answers, because they're not such B'nai Torah. So So Rashi understands that this refers to the Talmud HaChamim themselves. The Talmud HaChamim in Bavel are not of the caliber of the ones in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, in Bavel, they don't respect them so much for their Torah. So instead, the Talmud HaChamim, they wear nicer clothes, so that way at least people will respect them for that. There's a different explanation that some of the Mephoshim say, that it may mean that the people of Bavel, or the regular people, are not such Bnei Torah, and therefore they don't know how to appreciate the Talmud HaChamim, and therefore the Talmud HaChamim have to dress nicely to attract their attention and attract their covered, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, the average person is more of a Talmud HaChamim, and therefore they respect the HaChamim more. And the last question he asked was named Ma Bavliyim Mizohamim. Bavliyim is really a change of the censor. It was originally supposed to be Goyim or Nochrim or something like that. Anyway, why are the Bavliyim, or the Goyim in general, why are they Mizohamim, which means literally it means filthy? To a certain extent, it means the begashmius, that they're smelly, and then the answer that he's going to give actually has to do with that. Further on, the Gemara is going to imply that it means more ruchnis, to the kind of smell and of filth. It can be both, really. Anyway, he answers, because they eat disgusting, creepy, crawly creatures, and therefore that gives them this zuhama. There is, in fact, a story in Ovestid of Nassan, where one time it says Rabbi Akiva is visiting a certain country, and the king over there decides to, maybe he figures he's going to honor Rabbi Akiva, whatever it is. He sends a couple of women up to his room, and Rabbi Akiva, of course, wants nothing to do with them. So the next morning they go complain to the, we find actually at the end of Avodah Zarah, the Gemara mentions sort of the thing that the Persians particularly had that minhag, they would offer women to guests for that was their idea of hospitality. Anyway, so they go and complain, and then the king calls in Rabbi Akiva and says, what's going on? And he says basically they smell bad because of the shkotzim or masim that they ate. So, of course, it can mean a ruchniastika smell that the Rabbi Akiva had the sensitivity to recognize, but it can also mean a gashmiastika smell, partially from the fact that they eat different kinds of foods than we Jews do, and therefore that gives them, therefore that makes their metabolism and their body odor and whatever different. It can be both gashmias and ruchnias, yeah. Earlier in the Masechta, actually, in the whole sugya that we had a couple of weeks back, about Matan Torah and about the whole thing of the time it takes for Shichvas Zera to spoil before it's not viable anymore. We had a whole discussion. Most of the discussion was not Nanyaka, but anyway, the Gemara brings up the point over there also that Goyim's and Jews' bodies don't necessarily work the same way as far as their body. The Gemara mentions over there exactly that point. On the one hand, we Jews have the constant concern that whether we're doing mitzvahs properly, and therefore that raises our body temperature. On the other hand, the goyim eat shkotzim or masim, and therefore that raises their body temperature, so there can be an actual difference in metabolism and whatever between us and them.
Are you a Jewish woman 3 days, yeah?
So, the Gemara talks about it, right. The Gemara talks about it over there. Let's say, for example, it was a goy's shechvas zera and a Jewish woman's body, or the other way around, or what if it's an animal's body, whatever. The point is that the Gemara mentions the point over there that Jews and goyim's bodies may process things somewhat differently. Anyway, so Rav Chiya bar Abba had asked these four questions to Rav Asi, and Rav Asi gave him an answer to each one. Then, itar b'hu Rav Yochanan woke up. So if it means that he was napping, it means he woke up from his nap. If it means that he was on the verge of death, it means he rallied like one last time to be able to answer them. And Omar Lahu, he says, Darjiki, children, they're Talmidim. Literally, Rashi says, Darjiki means Bokharim. You haven't yet learned proper Svara. Loi kacha mauti lachem. Haven't I previously told you? The pasuk says, "Emor lachochma choisiot." Say to wisdom, meaning the wisdom of Torah, "You are my sister," and that means, "Embor lacha davaka choischa shiasur lacha." If something in Torah is clear to you, like the way it's clear to you that your sister is also to you, omrehu, then say it. The imlab al temrehu, and if not, don't say it. So, like this, the answers that you gave are not necessarily correct. Why Taka is the comparison to a sister rather than any other arayas? Marsha refers over here to something that he says in Sanhedrin on it, where the Gemara also brings this vote. And the idea is, he says, because most arayas, it's very logical to understand why you shouldn't marry them and have relations with them. A sister on the face of it is very close to you. It would make maybe an ideal relationship. And we find, of course, we find that Hevel and Cain married their sisters and the world was built up that way. So therefore, but nevertheless, we know that the Torah tells us it's also and that's that. There's nothing to talk about. So if you know that something, even though you may have a svara to the contrary, you know what the Torah says, and that's that, then you can say it, but if not, then not. Anyway. So, yeah. So they tell him, V'leimalon izi mihas umar ezamehem. V'leimalon izi mihas, the word izi can have two meanings. In different places in Shas, you have the word izi. It can mean my friend, but that wouldn't really be an appropriate lashon for the Rebbe over here. It can also mean the Rashbam and Chumash and some other Mefarshim explain that it can mean like in English you use the word then or so, like as a filler in a sentence. So tell us then. The other gear set that's been printed Gemara is Leimalan Mar Ezamehem. So Rebbe, tell us some of them. Why some of them? Daniel Hayoda says they're saying out of the four things that we said, there must be some of them that are correct. But at least tell us which ones you think are incorrect and tell us what it should actually mean. Anyway, so he goes through them. Why are the birds in Babel fatter? Now you're saying, Rav Asi, that the premise of the question is wrong because there are fatter ones in Midbar Aza. No, that's not the real thing. The real reason is because the birds in Babel never went into Golus, unlike the ones in Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, how do we know that not going into Golus makes a person, or even an animal, a creature in this case, a bird, able to be more healthier and so forth? Shanema, you find a pasuk, Shanan Moyav Min Urav, Moyav. Now here we're talking about about Bavel versus Moyav, but the point is the same thing. Marsha said the same thing applies, that the Navi is saying up till that point Moyav had never gone into Golus, and therefore they have much more of their original strength. So Shanan Moyav Min Urav, Moyav has been peaceful since its youth. The Shoket Hu Al Shmarav, it's resting calmly on its dregs. The metaphor is like a barrel of wine that's been sitting in one place for a long time, and all the dregs have sunk to the bottom. He's never gone into Golos, and therefore the pasuk finishes off. Therefore, their taste and their full strength has remained with them. So we see that when a person or a creature doesn't go into Golos, they remain stronger. So therefore, by the same token, the birds in Babel didn't go into Golos, unlike the ones in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore the ones in Babel are stronger. Marsha points out, by the way, how does that answer the fact that Rav Asi said the ones in Midbar Aza are even fatter? The answer is yes, Midbar Aza is technically part of Eretz Yisrael, but in practice it was taken over by the Plishtim. So therefore, when the Gemara is going to tell us now that Eretz Yisrael was empty after Churban Bayis Rishon for 52 years, that refers to the areas that had been inhabited by Jews. It doesn't refer to the parts that had been taken over by various Goyish nations. So therefore, even though Midbar Aza, yes, is part of Eretz Yisrael, but it was at that point controlled by the Plishtim, and it's true, the birds over there never went into Golos as well, and therefore, yes, it's true, they are fatter, but still, the Priya Bar Abba's question applies to the main parts of Eretz Yisrael.
They didn't
run into Golos, but the Plishtim. That's what we're going to say in a second. One second. The Hocha Menolan de Golos. So how do we know that? So how do we know that the birds in Eretz Yisrael went into Golos? So Titania, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Nun Beis Shana Le Ovar Ish Yehuda. For 52 years, no person passed through the land of Yehuda after the Churban. The people were gone, but also Eitz Yosef brings from a medrash that says that the whole Eretz Yisrael became covered with sulfur and salt. So therefore, it was uninhabitable for people, and it was uninhabitable for animals as well. So Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Allah, it's an Haftarah of Tisha B'Av, appropriately enough. Allah Horim Esav Chivon Nehi V'Gomer, and the Navi says, on the mountains of Eretz Yisrael, I'll raise a cry and a wail, and we're going, and he continues. The end of the pasuk goes, May Oifa Shemayim Bad Behemah Nodadu Halachu. From the birds of the heavens to the animals, they've wandered away and they've gone. So Eretz Yisrael is completely empty and desolate, or particularly Eretz Yehuda, we're saying. Behemah, the Gematria Nunbez, the word Behemah is Gematria 52. So this state of affairs lasted for 52 years. Rashi makes the calculation that from the Churban, from when they went into Golos, when Sipiyahu was captured and the Mikdash was destroyed and Jewish people were taken into Golos, from then there was 70 years of Golos Bavel, but 52 years after the Churban, you had Kurdish's proclamation that the Jews can return to Eretz Yisrael and start rebuilding the second Mikdash. So they came. Then you had the whole thing where the Shkusim and the other Goyim over there falsely slandered them that they're trying to rebel against the Persians, and therefore the building was stopped for 18 years, and it was finally resumed by the Nevi'im, Chagas, Chari, and Malachi told them to resume 18 years after that, And that makes the full 70 years. During that 18 years is when the whole story of Purim happened, etc. Anyway, the point is that for 52 years from the Churban, or from shortly after the Churban, because you had Gedalia's group, but then they left not long after that, after Gedalia was assassinated. So from then until Kurdish's proclamation is 52 years, and for that 52 years, the entire Eretz Yehuda was empty, not only of people, but we're saying also of animals and birds. So therefore, the birds went into Golos. That's what we're saying. However, that's what Marsha is pointing out. Only the ones that were in the areas that previously had been inhabited by Jews, ones that lived in the areas that are currently being occupied by the Plishtim, for example, such as Midbar Aza, those areas did not become desolate, and therefore people and animals and birds still live there, and therefore, yes, the birds in those areas are still fat. Why are we doushing the pasuk? Why are we doushing the word behema rather than just saying in the simple sense? It means that the animals all wandered away. So Marsha says, first of all, because part of the pasuk, which is not quoted over here in the Gemara, in the middle of the pasuk, mentions nikne, mentions livestock. So behema is included already in livestock, so there was no reason to mention it separately. Besides which, usually behema comes before oif, so therefore we're understanding that the word behema is, that va'ad behema means up to 52 years, they were wandering away and in exile, and only then after that they came back. There's a few other different explanations that Mephoshi can give why the Gemara doushens the word behema for this purpose. The Maharal makes a point that behema usually goes together where there are people, then usually there are animals because they keep the animals for livestock and for whatever. So therefore, if it already says that the people left, it wouldn't have to say behema, and therefore it must be for the Jerusha. Anyway, so that answers the first thing. And Amar Rab Yaakov, Amar Rab Yechanan, Kulan Chozru. Now he was aware that this is how this connects to the Gemara that we were saying before. So Rabbi Yaakov tells us in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, after the 52 years were up, Kulam Chozru, everybody returned. The animals, the birds, even the fish. Now, we haven't said until now that the fish left also, but the implication is that everything, the fish also left Eretz Yisrael during that time. They swam to other rivers or other bodies of water or whatever. So all of them returned, chutz b'koyas ha'ispanin, except for the koyas ha'ispanin. That is why this comes into the Gemara over here. And the Gemara will explain in two lines why the koyas ha'ispanin didn't. So first of all, what do we mean them returning? How do they return from one? So yeah, mackerels or tuna or whatever, yeah. So how are they going away and how are they returning in the first place? How do they move from one body of water to the other? So the Amar Rav, Hani Midori de Bavel, the down slopes of Bavel, Nahadri Maya La Ein Etam, there the water from them flows into Ein Etam. Ein Etam is a spring not far from Yerushalayim. The Kohen Gadol's mikveh in particular was supplied from it. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that it's a couple of, it's about 20, 23 amas higher in elevation than the Harabayas, so that way the water could flow by gravity into the mikveh. You don't need pumps. So by the same token, Rav is saying that, now Ein Etam is, again, it's a high point in Eretz Yisrael. It's even higher than the Harabayas, and the Harabayas itself is a fairly high point in that area. So what supplies it with water, what happens is you have in Bavel, you have the water of the Pras River. So that water flows underground. That water flows from the Pras River underground. And you have places where the elevation gets higher and higher. Now, how does water? Water can't climb elevations unless it started from a higher elevation. So in other words, Rab is saying what happens is you have the sources of the Pras are way up in high mountains in Turkey or whatever. So they descend down to the level of Bavel. But then you have these underground tunnels that go between there and Eretz Yisrael. The water ends up flowing through those underground tunnels and winds up feeding the underground aquifers that supply Ein Etam. So therefore, in short, when the fish left Eretz Yisrael, they traveled in that direction. They traveled downhill to Bavel through those. Now, when they're coming back after the 52 years, they have to travel uphill. They're going with the current of water, fine, but it's still uphill. So, Bahai, now the Koyas Ispanin, Kivin Dalei Shorer Shedre, since its spine is not strong, it doesn't have a hard spine like most kosher fish do, Loi Motzi Salik, it wasn't able to swim uphill like that. Through those underground tunnels, and therefore didn't return to Eretz Yisrael. So that's why you'll find it in Spain. That's why it's called Koyas Ispanin. You'll find it in Bavel. You'll find it in various other places. But you won't find them naturally in Eretz Yisrael because of that.
Yes, here it makes more sense as mackerel, because they're a small little nothing fish. Tuna is a big, strong fish.
Well,
it
depends on what kind of tuna, but yeah, okay. Anyway, fine. Okay, the next question was, why are the Yom Tovim in Bavel particularly happy? So Rav Asi's reason had been because in Bavel they're poor, and therefore Yom Tov is the particular time when they get to have, when they have nice food, they have more of a break from work. Marsha also adds the point that they drink wine, whereas in Eretz Yisrael they have wine all year round, so therefore it's less of a special thing for them. Anyway, Rav Yechanan says there's another reason. The real reason is because the Jews of Bavel were not included in the curse that the Navi says, that the Navi Hosea says about what's going to happen to the Jewish people that's going to result in them going into Golos. He says, "V'hishbati kol mesoisa." It's an Haftorah of Bamidbar, rather. "V'hishbati kol mesoisa." Hashem says, "I will make to cease all of her happiness." Chaga, her Yom Tovim, Chodra, her Rosh Chodashim, V'Shabbata, and her Shabbosim, V'Chol Moyada, and all her special occasions. So in other words, the Navi is saying that as a result of the Averis of the Jewish people, their Yom Tovim and the other happy occasions are not going to be as happy as they used to be. However, that curse was saying was only on the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, because that's where the Jews were living at the time when Hosea said this nevuah. So it never applied to begin with to the Jews of Bavel, and therefore that leaves their Yom Tovim much happier than the ones in Eretz Yisrael. Marsha points out, now the Pasuk is mentioning not only Yom Tovim, it's also mentioning Rosh Chodashim and Shabbosim. But the fact is, the Kol Mesoisa, when we're saying all of her happiness, we're assuming that it applies to the word Chaga, which is the next thing in the Pasuk. So in other words, the Pasuk is saying two things. As far as the special joy of Yom Tov, that will be made to cease. And as far as the lesser joy that they have on Rosh Chodashim and on Shabbos, those are also going to be interfered with, but not necessarily to the same degree. But in Bavel, the point is, they don't suffer from that Klala, so therefore their Yom Tov are much happier. And you have another pasuk in this connection where Yeshaya says, if we have a Haftorah of Shabbos Chazon, Hashem says, I hate your Rosh Chodashim and your Yom Tovim. Hoyu alive with Torah, they've become a burden to me. This is Hashem saying to the Navi, to the Jewish people, because of the way they're behaving, Hashem is saying that your Rosh Chodashim and your Yom Tovim have become a burden to me. Marsha says you're being happy on them, but not l'shem shemayim. So therefore, it's not you're not fulfilling the mitzvah by it. You're just bothering them. Now, my hoyu alive the Torah. What does that expression mean? That they're a burden to me. You could say Hashem might say I don't like them or something. In what way are they a burden to Hashem? So Amar Abulazer, Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, means that Hashem is saying through the Navi, Loi dayim liYisrael shechoytim lefanai. It's not bad enough that the Jewish people are sinning before me. Elishem atrichin oisi leida ezu gzera kasha ovi alein. They're so to speak bothering me and harassing me to know what harsh gzera I will bring against them. Meaning in other words, like Hashem is saying, so to speak, I have to decide on the spot what I'm going to do to them, and that's a tircha for me to have to do that. There's also Ben Yoyada points out the word leida might instead be punctuated li yadea, which means therefore to make them know, like they're doing these things wrong, and then they're still. They're asking the Nevi'im, or they're asking the Urim B'Tumim, or whatever, what's going to happen. So, like, so to speak, Hashem has the bother of informing them that he plans to do such and such. So therefore, that's what Hashem is saying. I don't like that at all. The result of that is that we're saying that the Yom Tovim are in Eretz Yisrael are less happy. So Amar Rav Yitzchok, Ein Machokol Regel VeRegel Shalei Basa Boilshus V'Sipori. There's not a single Yom Tov where you haven't had a Boilshus, which is a group of soldiers who go searching around the city to look for things that they can plunder or whatever. The Shodesh Bolash means to search. So you have always search parties coming to Tzipori, which was a major city of Jews in Eretz Yisrael at that time, and every Yom Tov you have them coming. Which means they're not even necessarily, they're not even necessarily coming Davka because they know it's Yom Tov, Rashi points out. Just the klala that Hashem gave through the Navi is causing that the Goyim, for their own reason, they end up sending their raiding parties into Tzipori, and it happens Davka on Yom Tov. So therefore it disturbs the Simchas Yom Tov of the Jews there. And similarly, for Omer Abchanina, Similarly, Rav Chanina says, "Ein l'chokol regel v'regel shalei bol de tveria Agma in the Kamta in the Baal's murder, there's not a single Yomtiv where there hasn't come to Tveria, which is another major city of Jews in Eretz Yisrael, where there would come on every Yomtiv an Agma in a Kamta and a Baal's murder. So these are all various kinds of high Roman officials. Agmon is where you have often in Shas, you have the word hegmon, which means a ruler. It comes from a Greek word that means a ruler. Kanton might be related to the word count. Literally, it comes from a word that means a companion of the king. And Baal Zmurda, so a Zmurda is a Zmurda is a stick or a stick or a reed. So in particular, it means, for example, police that come with sticks ready to beat people if they don't listen. It can also mean the Romans had a whole system over there where certain high officials were accompanied by in Latin they called a lictor, somebody who carried a bundle of a special bundle of reeds with an axe in it called a fasces. That's where the fascists in it, so they took that as their symbol. That's why they're called that. Anyway, the point is that the idea that it was supposed to symbolize like they can be used to beat people, and also that when on the other hand, when they're bound together, then they're tremendously strong, representing that they understood the power of Achus. So anyway, Baal's murder then could be one of these lictors who's coming together with the high officials and are ready to beat people if they step out of line. There is a different explanation. One of the Mephoshim says that Baal's murder can also mean the goyim that come with their disgusting music to bother us, which we know very well about. We may not have lictors, but we do have that kind of Baal's murder. Anyway. The point is, again, that Rav Yitzchak and Rav Chanina are saying that it's not even the goyim planet Davka to take place on our Yom Tovim, but Hashem plans that they have the idea to come Davka on the days when we're celebrating our Yom Tovim in Tveria and supporting major Jewish communities of that time, and therefore the Yom Tovim in Eretz Yisrael are disturbed and they're not as simchadic. As opposed to in Bavel, you don't have that, so therefore they're able to be more of a simcha. Next, the next question was, Rav Chiya Ba'aba had asked why the Talmid Chachamim in Bavel particularly distinguished in their dress, more so than the ones in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Asi had given the reason because they're not Bnei Torah, but Rav Yochanan says the real reason is, because they're not in their actual place. Because after all, we Jews belong in Eretz Yisrael. Bavel is not really to a certain extent it is. Hashem decided it's a place of Golus, but nevertheless, it's not the real home of the Jewish people. And therefore, they have to, so to speak, show off with nice clothes. The Amri Inshi, as the expression people say, the Mosa Shmoi, when I'm in my town, and then all I need for people to honor me is my name, because people know my name and they're familiar with me. Beloy Masa, but if I'm not in my city, if I'm someplace else, Toisvoi, then in order I need my garment to provide me honor. The word Toisva, Rashi explains, means a similar, means a garment. So therefore, when they're in Bavel, which is not our homeland, then therefore they need nicer clothing in order to be more distinguished.
Yeah, clothes make the man.
Clothes make the man, basically, right. But we're saying only when a person is not in his original hometown.
Yeah.
Yad Yosef gives a reference over here to an interesting thing that Reb Chaim Volozhiner says in his famous sefer, Nefesh HaChayim. He says a deeper idea of that behind that expression is it also refers to the Shechina. When the Shechina is in its place, as you have also more to the point, Al Tadeva talks about at the end of the first part of Tanya, then when the Shechina is in its place, you don't need a slabshus, doesn't need to be vested in anything, it's just right there, it's shoulder directly in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Whereas where beloy Mosa, when the Shechina is not in its place, then it needs to be malubush in the things in which the Shechina, in which the Shechina appears. Okay. So the Gemara continues in this vein, talking about then the Talmid Chacham of Bavel. Haboyim Yashvish on the up. So here we're saying. So again, Rav Asi had sort of put down the Chachamim in Bavel. He said they're not such great Chachamim, therefore they need nice clothes. Rav Yochanan is saying they're not in their place. But let's talk about how great the Talmid Chacham of Bavel in fact are, because the pasuk says, that's an Haftorah of Shmos, Haboyim Yashvish Yaakov, those who come from Yaakov will take root. Yotzitzu Farach Yisrael, Yisrael will blossom and produce flowers. So Tanan of Yosef, Eilu Tamar HaChamim Shem B'Bavel, Sha'osin Tzitzin U'Prochem LaTorah, this refers to Tamar HaChamim in Bavel, who make flowers and blossoms for the Torah, meaning in other words, Haboyim, those people of Yaakov who came to Bavel, and they took root over there, and they produce beautiful ornaments and flowers in the way that they learn the Torah, and they delve into it, and come up with Chidushim. So therefore, Rashi explains, this is meant to support Rabbi Yochanan's position against Rav Asi. Rav Asi was saying that the people in Bavel are not such Bnei Torah. Here we have, from this Jerusha, we see on the contrary, they're great Bnei Torah, and in fact, the Navi in advance is saying how great they're going to be, that they make blossoms and flowers for the Torah. Next, the last question was, why are the Bavliim, or we said the Goyim in general, why are they dirty? And the reason is, so Rav Asi's reason had been because they shkotzim or amasim. Rav Yochanan's reason is because they didn't stand by Har Sinai. What happened? When the snake first came on Chava. Now, the snake convinced Chava to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. Rashi brings, now afterwards, when Chava is trying to defend herself, when Hashem accuses her, why'd you eat from the tree? She says, Anochashi Shi'ani Va'oichel. The word Shi'ani means like he tricked me or he convinced me or something. But Rashi explains, we can also understand it as if it was written with a sin, and that he's Si'ani, in which case it would be Meloshin Nisuin. So the snake, literally, Ba'al, had relations with her to the extent that now, as the Gemara is going to say, that it had consequences for her and her descendants. Earlier in the Masechta, we had a thing over there where the Gemara described if a snake enters into a woman's body and what you do in order to get it out of there, so that Rapashtus relates to this over here also. Anyway, so B'shal Shabon Nochash Chava, when that snake came upon Chava and did this Hito Bozuama, he put a filth into her. So again, it can mean both a Gashmiyastika and a Ruchmiyastika filth. And the Gashmiyastika aspect of it includes the fact that there's a different refers and talk about. It includes the fact, for example, that before the Chet Tadas, human beings would have lived forever, and now they don't anymore. It includes the fact that now there's Ra within a person, whereas before there wasn't, and it includes various other kinds of things along those lines. So therefore, now Yisrael sh'amdu al Har Sinai, eventually the Jewish people stood by Har Sinai, Hoska Zuamasan, so therefore that Zuama went away. So they were Bavliim or Goyim, Shaloy Amdu al Har Sinai, let Hoska Zuamasan. The Goyim didn't stand over there, therefore their Zuama never was removed, and therefore till this very day they had that Zuama. That's a Bavliim is a change by the censor. It means all Goyim, yeah. There's an explanation on that says, you know, when we say in the Haggadah, in the Dayenus, we say, Ilu Kervonu Lefnei Har Sinai V'lonosim Malas HaTorah Dayenu. So what good would it be in front of Har Sinai if he hadn't received the Torah? This Gemara is one answer to that. Just standing by Har Sinai itself, where already even before we actually received the Torah, was enough to remove that Zuam. So Omalei Rav Acha Bered Derov Lerav Ashi Gerin Mai. Well, what about Gerin? They didn't stand by Har Sinai, and they don't have this Zuama. Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers, Afagab de'inu lai havu mazlayu havu. Even though they themselves were not there, their mazel, the shodash of their neshama, was there. So therefore, anybody who was there, in fact, Rashi brings, anybody who was there also was healed of all their mumin. Everybody who was blind and lame and whatever was healed. So they were also, their mazel, the mazel of the future gerim was also there, the shodash of their neshama. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, that's asher yeshnet koi manu oimed ayoyim begomer. Those who are saying Moshe at the end of his life is making a covenant with the Jewish people to reaffirm the Torah, but this is also like the one that they did at Har Sinai. And he says, everybody who's standing here today, and anybody who's not here, which includes, therefore, the Gerim of future generations. Which, in fact, Marashah says, at least with born Jews, now you have all the future generations of Jews. Fine, it's easy enough to say their neshamas were there. But because their bodies weren't there, but their neshamas, because their neshamas are all tzuris v'tzura chayim. But a gerim on the face of it, you can't say that. So therefore, that's why the Gemara has to say mazlayu was there, meaning a higher root of their neshama. However, the Gemara says a pligud of Abba bar Kahana. This explanation that was saying that when the Jewish people stood by Har Sinai, then the Zuama was taken away, that disagrees with Abba bar Kahana, who says that it was removed at a much earlier stage of Jewish history. The Amr of Abba bar Kahana, Ad Shloisha Dur, that's like Poska, Zuama Mavisain. It took three generations until that Zuama was removed from the Jewish people. Avraham holidus Yishmael, Yitzchak holidus Esav. So Avraham and Yitzchak both had a certain Zuama in them, which came out respectively in Yishmael and in Esav. All over the place in Chassidus, it talks about different aspects of that Avraham is personifies Midas HaChesed, but there's also a Chesed of Klippa, and that came out in Yishmael. And Yitzchak was Gvura, but there's also a Gvura of Klippa, and that came out in Esav. Yaakov, Holad, Yud Beis Shvatim, Shlaya Bam Shum Doifi, and then Yaakov, father of the 12 Shvatim, where there's no flaw in them, so therefore at that point, of Abba Bar Kahana was saying the Zuama was removed. Obviously, the obvious thing would be to say, and there are actually Sfarim that talk about this, that it means that there are different stages. There's one stage of the removing the Zuama was accomplished in Yaakov and his times, and then you have a higher level, the full thing of it was accomplished at Har Sinai. Zuama literally means filth or a bad smell. So yeah, it includes, as we said before, it means a gashmiyistik thing as well as a ruchmiyistik one. Marashah brings over here from a Sefer Yoshan, a Sefer of Kabbalah, that says exactly that, that this Zuama that the Nachash put into Chava makes it that Rishoyim will be born. We find that when Shais was born, she says that the Shais will be instead of Hevel, and he's the first one that says Vayirad bin Musa Kitsalmai that he was exactly like Adam, whereas Cain and Hevel were on a lower level. And the same way, we're saying over here, Avraham, this Zuama later on brought about that Avraham and Yitzchak have children who are Rishoyim, and only Yaakov, finally, when the Zuama is removed, then he's able to have children who are all Tzadikim. Further on, the Gemara talks about, the Mishnah talks about certain things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, certain kinds of exercises and things like that. One thing the Mishnah mentions is that you're not supposed to go to a certain kind of place where you have a sandy, muddy soil, where the point is you go over there in order to sweat, and you're not supposed to be doing that on Shabbos, or different other things that it does good for you. The Gemara mentions in this connection also, for example, bathing in the Dead Sea, different other things like that you're not supposed to do on Shabbos.
There
are certain kinds of places where the mud is supposed to be very good for you. So in this connection then, so the Gemara mentions in that connection a place called Dyumsis, where they have very good spas like that. I guess the kind of mud we're talking about is like you think of, for example, let's say in Yellowstone or something, you have all these places where you have these boiling mud things and then other things like that, which can be very therapeutic. But on Shabbos, you don't belong over there. So the Gemara mentions in this connection a particular place called Dyumsis that had these kinds of hot mud springs and other things like that. So the Gemara says, Omer Reb Chelboy, Tamrej Prugisa, Umaya Dyumsis, Hipchu Aseres HaShvatim Yisrael. The wine of Prugisa, which is a place where that produces a very high quality wine, and the water of Dyumsis, where again you have these spas and this mineral water that's very good for your health, those things cut off the Aseres HaShvatim from the Jewish people. Because what happened? The Aseres HaShvatim were very much into these pleasures of drinking wine and bathing and going to these spas and places like that. And that eventually caused them to not be so involved in learning Torah, and therefore that led them down the wrong path until eventually they were out and out worshipping Avodah Zarah and they had to go into Golos. So in other words, a person has to be careful. These things are available in the world for a Yid to enjoy, but a Yid has to know to use them only in moderation. So the Gemara tells, Rabbi Lozer ben Aruch ikla lahosem. Rabbi Lozer ben Aruch came to that place, to Prugiso, Dyumsis, Imshich Basrayu, and he also was induced to follow them, to follow this hedonistic lifestyle over there of wine and spas and things like that. And the result is he forgot his learning. In a couple of Midrashim, it tells the story in more detail. As long as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was alive, his famous five Talmidim that we have in Pirkei Avos were constantly with him learning Torah. And Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was the fifth one over there. Then when he passed away, four of them said we should go to Yavne and join the other Chachamim and continue learning Torah full time. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch's wife was from this area. The Medrash calls it, the city Emos, which is a famous spa town in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, she says to him, we should move over there, which is where I'm from. And it's a nice, comfortable place to live with all the spas and all that. He says, what about learning Torah? She says, listen, you know, when the mice need water, who goes to who? Does the water go to the mice, or do the mice go to the water? Meaning, you're the great Talmud Chacham, your Rebbe said on you that you're Kamayin and Misgaber, and then in Yil Kochach Misrael, we have everything in this week's Pirkei Avos, all the great things about you. So let them come to you rather than you have to go to them. So he followed her advice, and they moved to Emos or Dyumsis or whatever, and the result was that he forgot his learning. Eventually, when he came back to where the Chachamim are, or the Medrash says differently, that the other Chachamim one time came to visit him, come the Mikri B'Sifra, he got up to read from the Sefer Torah, Bo the Mikri Achodesh HaZalachem, he was going to read the Pasuk Achodesh HaZalachem, and Omar, instead he misread it, HaCheresh Hoyal Libam. Remember, a Sefer Torah has no Nekudas. And he also, so it's not, in other words, first of all, Maharsha says, why would you dock the beginning with that Pasuk? Because the first mitzvah in the Torah. We're not saying that literally, necessarily, that he couldn't read anymore. What we mean is Hashem caused him to misread the Dalet as a Reish, and the so Chodesh becomes a Cheresh, and the Zayin of Hazer to be misread as a Yud, and then the Chof of Lochem to be misread as a Vez. It was meant as a message, Min HaShemayim, HaCheresh Hoyol Libam, their heart became deaf. In other words, because that's what happened to him. His heart became deaf from Torah. Bo Rabbon and Rachmi Alei, the other Chachamim, davened for Rachmanos for him, Vahodr Talmudei, and his learning was restored. So even though his learning was restored, that still only put him where he was before all this happened. He never again became as great as the other Chachamim. And in fact, you see, there's not one, even though Rabbi Yechim Manzakeh says such a tremendous thing about him in this week's Pirkei Avos, you don't have a single place in all of Mishnayos where there's any halacha ever said in his name. Because that's what he lost from all those years of enjoying the pleasures of Diumsis. So the things he said before, but nevertheless, we don't have, apparently, what he said before was only when he was a Talmud of Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. So, but we have, I mean, there's a Gemara in Chagiga, for example, that mentions him teaching tremendous things in Ma'aseh Merkava, but nevertheless, as far as Halachos, and yeah. So Vahainu Jatnan, this is what we say later in Pilkei Avos, Rav Nehoroyim, they have a Godel and Prem Torah, go into Golus to a place of Torah, in other words, don't follow what Rav Elazar ben Arach did, Va'al Toimashi Tovei Acharecha, don't say, like his wife said to him, that the Torah will follow you, instead, Shechaverecha, Yitaymu V'yadecha, your friends will preserve the Torah by you, meaning Rashi says, when you learn constantly with them, you're learning one Masechta, they're learning a different one, you will overhear them learning, and that'll help you remember it, so you don't forget it while you're doing another one. And don't rely on your own understanding. So this is all Rav Elazar ben Arach. This is all telling us not to follow what he did. So Tana Lo Rav Nehoroi Shmoi Ela Rav Nechem Yishmoi Va'ami Lo Rav Elazar ben Arach Shmoi V'Lomer Nekhus Shmoi Rav Nehoroi. So why is he called Rav Nehoroi in this Mishnah? Shemanhu Eini Chachamim BaHalacha, because he enlightens the eyes of the Chachamim in Halacha. But nevertheless, he still lost so much that he never again reached their level. Does he? Yeah, exactly, but I don't remember what it is, and I didn't look it up. Believe me, I do. I'll look it up, and I'll say it over tomorrow, yeah. Besides, we're out of time now, pretty much. All right, Yom Yen Mashiach Go'olo, real quick. Yudches Sivan. Chazal tell us, and the Rambam brings the halacha, that all the Sforim and Vivim and Ksuvim are going to be bottled the most Mashiach, except from Gilas Esther, as opposed to halachas of Torah Shabbat Peh, which will never be bottled, just like Kamisha Chum Shei Torah. Meaning, we know that the concept of Torah is eternal, the Rambam stresses that point, so that includes the halachas of Torah Shabbat Peh, the meaning of the mitzvahs through which we know how to do the various mitzvahs, those are all Kayim Lo'olam Lo'olam Lo'olam. All right, that brings us to a halacha. If you put a down payment on something, or some other way that you show you're going to buy this or whatever, even though no kinyan has been done yet, but if either one of them retracts at that point, then he's not acting the way a Jew should, and he can be obligated in Beis Din to accept the curse of Misha Parah, meaning that Beis Din tells him, who the Hashem who punished the Dura Mabul and Dura Flogra and Sperman Amurda and the Mitzriim will punish somebody who doesn't keep his word. So then the sale is undone, but then the Yid should not act that way. Yeah.